This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Oh, yeah. It's a big day for us today on the show to react to potential peace with Russia and Ukraine. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump. She is the Vice President of the Davis Institute for Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation and the author of the must-read book of the year, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. She's Philadelphia's own Dr. Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Well, it's a great day, Rich. We're coming from the Prospects game in Clearwater and headed off to Tampa to watch the Phillies play the Yankees.
Boy, you really know how to make a guy feel good, don't you?
Just trying to make you a little jealous.
I was literally supposed to be down there last weekend with my son, with my dad, and this stupid friggin' foot thing, and I couldn't go to spring training this year, and I'm so bummed. How's my buddy John Brazier? Is he doing well?
He is fantastic. We'll see him tomorrow morning. We were going to broadcast together from the Tiki Bar tonight, but he had to leave, and then we had to go too. So,
I was going to have a surprise guest on the show.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that would have been great.
Our original plan.
Well, give him my best. Tell him I miss him, and hope to see him soon. It'll have to be at Citizens Bank Park, but nevertheless. Well, good. I'm glad you're having a good time down there. I want to play a clip for you. This is Victoria Nuland, of course, who we all know. Actually, how would you best describe, from your perspective, Dr. Victoria Coates, how would you best describe Victoria Nuland?
I like to differentiate her from me as people call her Toria. And I am Victoria. So they're two different humans because people tend to get us mixed up. But she is the personification of the swamp. She is married to somebody who is the longtime head of Brookings Institute. And we actually inherited her in the first Trump term as the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe. And this is how naive we are. We kept her for a number of months. And then she came back as the number three at the State Department under President Biden, and it just is the personification of what you'd call the establishment foreign policy sort of consensus in Washington. And so I think, you know, what she has been peddling for the last 30 years is just been a disaster.
There's been a lot about how she was behind the 2014 coup in Ukraine. Is there truth to that?
Well, she was our ambassador to Ukraine at the time. And was the one who went out and, you know, sort of supported all of that. So she was certainly a participant in it.
All right, very good. Not good, but I mean, thank you for clarifying that. Well, here's what she said regarding the potential peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. She's not a fan. Take a listen.
Look, it is really very, very important that in this period that Europe not only be able to step up, but step up fast, because as the artillery shells run out, as the air defense interceptors run out, as the ability to produce drones at scale, which have made the difference for Ukraine on the battlefield, gets harder, Europe has the capacity not only with these proposals, but conceivably collateralizing against frozen assets that they are holding of Putin's, at least for a short time, to do more and to do it fast. The thing that's concerning me most today is the cutoff of intelligence streams from the United States and pressure on allies like the UK not to use U.S. intelligence for their own weapons. The primary purpose of U.S. intelligence has been to help the Ukrainians see Russian attacks coming and have advanced warning. There are also key weapon systems that do not cue and do not hit their targets without support from U.S. satellite cueing and the military GPS system. So people are going to die. Ukrainians are going to die, more of them. If this pause lasts significantly longer, and it is dangerous, and it's not a capability that Europe can replace with any kind of speed.
So, Dr. Victoria Coates, if that's the case, then why would Ukraine agree to this?
I mean, there's so much there, Rich, that I think we need to unpack. I mean, for starters, her last statement. Europe can't replace this capability. That is true for so many different things. And, you know, it's great that Ursula von der Leyen found $1 trillion in the couch cushions in Brussels 10 days ago and suddenly decided they were going to start funding European defense 3 years into this war. Ridiculous. They can't get there, as you'd say, fast enough to do anything to help the Ukrainians. And suddenly, Victoria Nuland is concerned about Ukrainians dying. Well, that's what President Trump is talking about. He's right. Talking about the fact that hundreds of thousands have died, and he wants to end that killing because he does not see any kind of practical route to American and Ukrainian victory, given what's happened over these last 3 years. So he's the one who's talking about ending the killing. And over the last 72 hours, we've finally seen progress towards that. A ceasefire is on the table. The Ukrainians have accepted a lot of these terms, at which point, guess what? We turned back on the intel sharing. So all of the doom and gloom she was talking about didn't happen because it's all turned back on. And the Russians are now talking about the fact that they may also be looking at the ceasefire, and we could at least make some progress here towards some sort of diplomatic discussion. There's been none of that over the last 3 years. Well, she has been one of the key players in this, and for her to come out and try to undermine progress right now, it's just beyond the pale.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, first of all, that was a negotiating tactic clearly by President Trump to get Ukraine to agree by saying, well, then we'll turn off the intelligence and then you'll be screwed. I just don't think she wants this war to end. I mean, she always seems to me, for all these years that Ukraine or Russia invaded Ukraine, I should say, at no point did the Biden administration try to do peace talks. That is a very important point here that the American people need to understand. At no point did they ever try. Very early on, when the war happened, some Democrats did write a letter to Biden saying, please, let's have peace talks here and potential ceasefire. That letter went away faster than you can say ferret. And I'll explain what I mean by that in just a second. But that was it. Then they never had any conversations anymore about wanting the war to end. Talks for peace, nothing. And we went from no tanks because that could be World War III, no planes because that could be World War III, to as long as it takes for as long as it takes to whatever they need, and that's where things were.
No, and another whatever it's been. I mean, 177 that's been appropriated, I think 250 billion that's been assigned that potentially could be sent. I mean, this is a huge amount of money. Over the course of the last, whatever it's been, 50, 60 years, we've given Israel $175 billion total. And this is, we're now well over that for Ukraine in 3 years. So I think people need to realize the scale of what we've been committed to here. And, you know, this has gone, as you said, it's just been a grind. It's gone nowhere. They had no interest in getting to any kind of resolution to the conflict. As a matter of fact, they seemed vested in keeping it going. And I think particularly for somebody like Toria Nuland, you know, this is her bread and butter. This is why people invite her on MSNBC, invite her on CNN, invite her on their podcasts to talk about how we have to be in this existential battle for democracy. And don't get me wrong, I am a big fan of democracy. I enjoy participating in it in Pennsylvania as well as nationally. I wrote a book about the history of democracy. But, I mean, if we're in a battle for democracy here and we have somebody who hasn't had an election for 3 years when he was supposed to, you know, the whole thing is just kind of hollow. So I think that President Trump is 100% correct. We need to get to some sort of resolution to this because we have bigger problems than Ukraine.
Yeah, no question about it. Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. She's the author of the must-read book, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. From Putin's perspective, obviously, he put out what he really needs to have this happen. The Secretary General of NATO was there yesterday talking to the president. A couple of things I wanted to get your opinion on with regard to that. Number one is the idea of Ukraine becoming a NATO member. I mean, as far as I can tell, that's an absolute non-starter for Vladimir Putin, right?
Well, I actually don't give Putin a veto over who does and does not get into NATO, but there is a reason that Ukraine wasn't in NATO in January of 2022 before the invasion, and that all has to do with corruption and rule of law issues, which is you have to get to certain benchmarks to become a NATO member. So they're not there. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with Putin, but having everything to do with NATO, NATO membership cannot be a messaging device. You have to meet the requirements to get into the charter, and then you have to pass it through the United States Senate as a treaty. So when Sweden and Finland joined last year, we had to get those through the Senate. And because Sweden and Finland are very logical members of NATO, they're great additions. They both have strong militaries, strong economies, great rule of law. That was not a conflict. It wasn't difficult. But for Ukraine, it's going to be a big challenge. It's going to be a process for them. And one of my questions for everybody is, why don't you put them in the European Union? That's an economic organization. It's not a military organization. So why aren't they in the EU if the Europeans are so gung-ho on this? And nobody seems to have a good answer for me on that one.
All right. So nobody seems to have a good answer for you on this, which is a really good question to you, to what we're looking for here. The other question regarding the EU, and this kind of gets us away from Ukraine for a second, but it regards tariffs and what the president says about how the EU is there to hurt the United States of America. And he talked about his own experiences doing business with the EU and how it was a nightmare. And what is he looking for here in terms of the European Union with its relationship with America when it comes to things like tariffs and trade?
Well, I think what he's trying to achieve here is a level playing field, that we have had all of these free trade agreements between the United States and entities like the EU, individual countries within the EU, and they have had what we call a value-added tax, which is their way of kind of dodging this, and tariffs on the United States. But what he's saying is, if you're going to do this, and we have historically assumed that economic burden in order to help countries that are reconstructing, like Europe after World War II, but we're now 80 years out from World War II. They don't need those protections. And right. What I see when I look at Europe is I see, after the United States, the biggest economies, the Germany, United Kingdom, France, the Netherlands, which is where Mark Rutte, the current Secretary General of NATO, is from, Canada, which we've discussed, Spain. I mean, the top three are clinging to 2% by their fingernails. The rest of them are well under 2%. I believe Spain's at 1.29, Canada at 1.38 investment of GDP in defense. You can't go on that way with these tariffs, with us taking both the economic and the security burden to try to support an economy that's roughly the size of ours. The EU and the U.S. economies are more or less equivalent. No, this can't go on. And that's what the president is saying.
Now, let's turn our attention, if we could, to Greenland, because when the subject came up yesterday in the Oval Office, the president brought it up. The Secretary General of the of NATO mentioned how China has been encroaching on the Western Hemisphere. And he actually brought this up as a very positive thing for NATO members if we were to have either, I don't know, ownership of Greenland or control of it in some manner, shape or form. But it was interesting to hear him say that.
No, he's gotten religion on a lot of things. When he was prime minister of the Netherlands, they were, even then, well under their 2%. But suddenly, they, you know, he is now talking the right game here, which I welcome. That's great. But in terms of Greenland, if you look at the map, it's almost an extension of the United States. It's an area where, you know, we have enormous natural resources, also a problem if China gets involved there. And what's interesting is they had an election last week, Rich, and their center-right party, which has been beleaguered and not made much progress, won. Everybody was shocked. And these are the folks who are the most interested in potentially partnering with the United States. I don't actually favor statehood for Greenland right now. It's, I mean, that's a very big deal. But I certainly think we can come to a relationship.
And the idea of NATO members paying more money, which is, again, you say he found religion, the Secretary General of NATO coming out and saying, hey, look, thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for getting these members to cough up more money. I would think that that's NATO wins if the United States says to these other countries, you got to pay your fair share, because it ultimately means NATO is going to get more money. So, and yet the left turns around and says Donald Trump wants to destroy NATO. He doesn't care about NATO. He wants to do everything he can to help Vladimir Putin win. If he pressures other countries to give NATO more money, I'm sorry, but doesn't that benefit NATO?
No, it's a huge win for everybody involved. And they should have been doing this. I mean, not to date myself, but as you know, I used to work for Don Rumsfeld, and you know, he was writing letters back to then Secretary Kissinger in 1974 saying the Europeans were not spending enough on their defenses. So this has been going on for 50 years, and it is well past time to stop. And the United States pressuring Europe to spend what they should spend on their defense is simply smart. And they should have done it 3 years ago, when last time war broke out in Europe. It's crazy that, you know, it took Donald Trump coming back into office to make this happen.
As the author of the book Battle for the Jewish State, there's a report that the Heritage Foundation is recommending ending foreign aid to Israel. Is that actually a real thing?
This is crazy, and it's incredibly dishonest and hypocritical, I think, headline from the Jewish Insider from last week, talking about a report that my colleague Rob Greenway and I have been working on for almost 10 years, which is a strategy for the U.S.-Israel relationship. And we worked on this for President Trump during the first term. He signed a version of it in December 2020. When we came to Heritage, we decided we should dust that off, modernize it, get it up to date. And one of the things we recommend is that the roughly $3.5 billion that we provide in security assistance to Israel every year, that we should look to the 100th anniversary of Israel, which is going to be in 2048, and say at that point we should be at parity. We should be equal partners the way the United States is with, say, the United Kingdom. And so what we proposed in the report is we actually plus that up to $4 billion for the first 5 years, and then start every year reducing it by $250 million, which we put into foreign military sales rather than foreign military financing. And that gets us to zero in financing by 2048. This is 23 years away. I mean, we're not talking about doing this tomorrow. And what the enemies of this plan and the enemies of Israel being strong and independent, and a lot of what inspired this was the fact that the Biden administration really tried to manipulate this funding last year and tried to coerce Israel into doing what they wanted. You know, that didn't go well.
Yeah.
And so we want to start doing this work now, so that Israel can be stronger. And for a publication like that to have their headline be, you know, the big bad MAGA Heritage Foundation, is trying to cut aid to Israel was really destructive of something that is designed to make the relationship better. So I really urge all of your readers who are interested, the report is proudly on Heritage's website. We've just circulated it to all congressional offices this week, and I think it's really going to blow back on them.
Remember something, though. This audience does not read. I mean, at best, maybe comic books, maybe pop-up books, but let's not give this Giuliani too much credit here.
I can get them the clip notes. Yeah.
But we do read your book, of course, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. All right, so then, since you got a baseball game to watch, let me ask you this question then, and it has to do with energy, and I think it's a really critical one that we're talking about. There was an op-ed written on Broad and Liberty recently by our friend Martina White, and she talked about Philadelphia should have a liquid natural gas export facility, something you were talking about not too long ago at the Union League, and calling on Josh Shapiro to make this happen. Let's do this. Let's make this happen. When I heard that the European countries were giving $1 trillion to Vladimir Putin in 2024 alone, and then as the great Dr. Victoria Coates says, because Russia is a gas station with nuclear weapons, I thought this is mind-boggling. You know, here Ukraine, here's $20, here's $30, and Putin, here's $1 trillion. We could be, the United States of America could lead the world and make a ton of cash and employ a lot of people here. How complicated would it be to get a liquid natural gas export facility up and running in the southeast of Pennsylvania?
It wouldn't be complicated at all. We could actually do two. We could do one in New Jersey and one in Philadelphia, and we could just pump all of this natural gas. And I love Martina. She is a treasure. And, you know, I strongly agree with everything she's saying there. And I really think that the natural gas potential of the United States is what fuels this next American century. And it's how we can lift folks out of poverty. We're not going to do that on wind and solar. I'm sorry. I mean, I know how much you love wind, Rich, but it's not going to happen. You know, you're not going to fuel a hospital on this wind. It's not going to be transformative. And for the Europeans to pay more to Russia for their gas and oil than they do give to Ukraine for defense, I mean, I'm sorry. I can't care more than they do. But at the same time, I can give them the option of, hey, would you like to buy nice, clean, plentiful Pennsylvania natural gas? Because we can really increase our exports. And if we had this facility, we can just ship that right across the Atlantic.
Let me just say for the record, just to clarify, the only reason why I like wind is because I hate whales and I hate dolphins. That's the only reason why I support wind.
And birds.
Right. Hey, yeah, they are the deli slicers in the sky, obviously.
Right.
All right, buddy, listen, go enjoy your weekend in Clearwater. We're not at all jealous. Go Phils and get the book today, Battle for the Jewish State. Dr. Victoria Coates, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
You take care.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Okay, we got a lot to get to. But since we brought up the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, and since it is our happy hour, I am really thrilled to share with you officially the dates that we are going to be live at the Grand Hotel in 2025. All right, are you ready? This is good stuff here. So, officially, June 20th, our first live show of the year at my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Now, that's a great time to go because you're not at peak summer yet, but it's summer and kids are getting out of school. It's a great time to go. If the pool, well, the pool's heated on the outside. It's outdoor heated and indoor heated, so you're covered either way. August 15th. Oh, I'm really excited for this one. Halloween. Yeah, that's right. October 31st. Halloween. We're going to do a big costume party. We're going to do something. We're going to come up with something fun. And then December 19th for our Christmas Spectacular, Zioli Show Christmas Spectacular on ice. So mark those dates down. They're all Fridays, June 20th, August 15th, October 31st, and 12/19. It's going to be great. Sign up, and we'll see you there. It'll be a lot of fun. As we continue along here, let me share with you, Matt, where are we on the votes right now? I know you were monitoring the count.
Yeah, so the... the filibuster is broken. They did actually reach cloture. It's 62-38 was the final vote. Now they are working on a couple of amendments that were proposed, but none of the amendments are likely to pass. I think the three that are proposed by Democrats are absolutely destined to fail, especially since they need 60 votes. And then Rand Paul has an amendment, but that's not likely to pass either because it would require the House to basically re-vote on the bill. And supposedly, Speaker Johnson sent all the House Republicans home earlier in the week. So there's no pathway there either.
The other thing is you're saying some news broke around comedian Bill Burr. He got a lot of blowback this week when he was, I don't know if it was a joke or not, if he was being serious about Luigi Mangione, who's the guy who murdered in cold blood the CEO of United Healthcare. And he was talking about free Luigi. He was going on about this. But you're saying he just said something on The Breakfast Club. Do we have the audio of that?
We do. And I believe Kirk has the video. I have the audio. There's cursing in it, so it required some censorship. But
all right, we can play it. Terrible. We can play it when we get back from the break if you want. Oh, should we do that?
Oh, no, it's ready to go. It should be good to go.
Oh, it's ready to go? Okay, this is what he said on The Breakfast Club with Charlamagne the God.
Like a few years later, this guy Siegtiled twice.
Two of them.
Once in the front, if you missed it in the back. And it's just like he still has a job. That guy still has a job. I don't understand those guys, and this isn't politically. It's just like, I don't understand why they're so upset with this country. It's like you're billionaires. I think it's working for you. Like, you know, why are you going and telling everybody, you know, justify what you do? It's like, justify what you do. Mm-hmm. That piece of car that you're making that the government financed. No?
But you know what you just said? You said that Elon still has a job. He's the richest man in the world. There's nothing they can do to him. And that's all he proved. There's nothing anybody can do to him by throwing up when he did that. Yeah. What do you take from him? He's not Kyrie Irving. He's not Kanye. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, but you keep. I don't know. I don't know how this works. I'm just saying that, you know, if you said the wrong thing as a comedian, all of a sudden you lost your TV show.
But you're not the richest man in the world. If you were the richest comedian in the world ever,
imagine
Bill Burr.
What I don't get is the amount of veterans that the people in the armed services that died trying to stop Hitler, and then this guy comes in, you know, and does that. While being an immigrant, too, which is kind of the whole thing, just none of it like tracks how you can be the support the troops, you know, America, love it or leave it. And then this guy comes in and gives a shout out to Hitler.
Makes no sense at all.
Yeah, it doesn't. So I don't know. But then somehow that gets like politicized. I'm not trashing Republicans. All Republicans did not Sieg Heil. That guy did. Yeah. And I was just amazed that all liberals had was one day of outrage. And they're like, all right, I guess that didn't work. And then we just kind of move on.
Because they realize they can't do anything to him. Like, what do you do other than send out some angry tweets?
Well, I still don't think Elon Musk was saluting Hitler. I think that that's ridiculous. But I hope his comedy special is a lot funnier than that. That's all I can say. Because he's got a new comedy special on Netflix, which is what he's promoting. But I think he's a funny guy. I've always liked him. He's so Saturday Night Live. I haven't really heard him go down this road of crazy till lately. I don't know. But Elon Musk was not tweet. That's just Elon's goofy. Even Mike Myers in Saturday Night Live, to his credit, when he makes fun of him, is always making fun of his goofy movements and everything else. He wasn't Zeke Heiling. That's ridiculous. It's insane. But honestly, if you are looking to, I mean, Hitler was a fascist. Hitler was a socialist and a fascist, and you could be both. And he was consolidating government. This Elon Musk is helping Donald Trump to essentially now give up power. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. It's giving up power of the executive branch and returning it to the legislative branch. That's not what fascists do. Whether it's Hitler, Mussolini, or Franco still dead, they don't give power back to the legislative body. They seize it all for themselves. That's not what DOGE is about. DOGE is about trying to dismantle a strong centralized federal government bureaucracy that is too big, has too much power over the people, and the people have no way to hold it in check. And it's not accountable to the people. I mean, literally the definition of fascism is a strong centralized form of central government. It's not federalism. And whether it was Franco or Hitler or Mussolini or any of the other, you know, JOs around the world who embrace that mindset, they stole power from their legislative bodies and had it all for themselves. We have managed to essentially do the same thing in this country, which is take away all the power from the legislative branch under the guise of the bureaucracy. But it's the same concept of a centralized federal government, not accountable to the people. I would argue America is fascist right now. We have a fascist form of government with the bureaucracy. Because how do I deal with bureaucrats who put in rules, promulgate rules that affect my life and cost me money and potentially take away my freedom? I can't vote these people out of office. They're there for life. So how is that a constitutional republic if that's the way it is? I mean, I know if I don't like how my representatives vote on something, I can run against them. I can try to raise money to defeat them. But what do I do about some bureaucrat in a three-letter, four-letter agency who's promulgating rules that nobody can do anything about? So when you say Elon Musk is, Doge is Hitler, the guy is trying to, and so is Donald Trump, trying to end this. And by doing so, you're giving power back to elected representatives like Kat Kamik, who then is going to put forward the Reins Act, which is going to rein in these agencies and all of the rules and powers that they have put on the American people without any accountability whatsoever. It's such a dumb analogy. People just don't know their history, I guess. I don't know. It frustrates me to hear this because people make this stuff up all the time. Hitler was a bad dude. His whole form of government was bad. Communism and socialism, it was a National Socialist Party. That's what the Nazi Party was. But remember, this is an important point of a historical note, which I'm amazed I have to remind people of. But when World War II started, Hitler had a couple pals. One of them was a guy named Joe Stalin. Like, they were buds. I know as the war ended, it didn't work out that way, but they were buddies at the time. And they had similar political philosophies, although what Hitler disagreed with the commies and what the commies disagreed with the Nazis. I mean, these are all various different points, but the two of them were two megalomaniacs who wanted absolute power and were willing to kill anybody who got in their way and consolidated complete power. And there was no disagreement. You couldn't disagree with them. And had the Nazis not invaded Russia, you could argue that they probably would have remained buddies throughout the course of everything. And the only reason why we aligned with the Soviet Union was to defeat the Nazis. But then when that war ended, it wasn't like we were palling around with Joe Stalin after that. There was a whole thing called the Cold War. And we divided up Germany. They got half. We got half. There was a wall. Remember that whole thing with the wall? It's like, do they just not teach this stuff in schools anymore? Or is everybody just forgotten that Joseph Stalin was not the good guy and Hitler wasn't the bad guy? They were both bad guys. We just aligned with the one bad guy after the other bad guy betrayed the other bad guy. And so we used that bad guy and his resources because we needed it. And that bad guy who didn't like us aligned with us because he had to, because he didn't have the resources to be able to defeat the other bad guy. And when that war ended, we proceeded to be enemies with the other bad guy like we were before the war started. I don't understand. It frustrates me how much we've just forgotten these things in American history. And nothing infuriates me more when people try to pretend like Hitler is misunderstood. He's not. He was a bad guy. But nothing makes me more angry when people act like Hitler was somebody who wanted to give power back to the people. He wasn't some sort of a populist. Fascism is not populism. It's two very, very different things here. A lot of fascists ran on the basis of populism, and then when they got in power, they consolidated all the power. So that's not, even if they run, you could run as a populist and have a populist message like Hitler did, like a lot of these other guys did, but then when they get in there, they don't return any power, they seize it all for themselves. Like Justin Trudeau's dad, for example. Not the adoptive one, the biological one. The little guy down in Cuba. All right, we'll have to stand. You're not going to say anything about that? You're just going to let that go? Huh?
We all know that Justin's real father is, of course, Pierre Trudeau, despite what you just suggested.
Allegedly, although the five's on right now, and I think Greg Gutfeld looks more like Pierre Poilievre than Justin Trudeau does. I'm just saying. Not Pierre Poilievre, nice, Pierre Trudeau. Nice. Just saying. All right, when we come back, we got it, the ultimate test. Snagglepuss or, what was it now? Snagglepuss?
Sylvester the Cat.
Sylvester the Cat and Ferret. And we'll find out which one we like best from that lunatic Sheldon Whitehouse. And also, too, are you thinking the same thing I'm thinking? You're thinking to yourself, man, what is going to come of this vote? Are they going to pass it? And then will this be the end of Chuck Schumer's political career? We'll find out. I'll tell you one thing, though. I'm really happy it's Friday. It's been a long week. But if you've been avoiding the dentist, I want you to stop avoiding it. Pick up the phone and call my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria. He's my buddy. He's my friend. He's a great guy. You see, having healthy teeth, it's not just about appearance, although that matters a lot. It's also going to make you feel like $1 million. It's critical. It's a critical part of your overall health and well-being. It really is. I've been telling you about Dr. Mike for years, so go see him today. My entire family goes to Dr. Veneria because the level of care and commitment to dental excellence that Dr. Mike and his staff delivers to every patient is simply unmatched. He has been named a top dentist in New Jersey for 10 consecutive years as one of the most respected reputations among his peers as a master of dental implants. So if you've been on the fence about getting that complicated dental procedure, or if you're looking for a second opinion, reach out to Dr. Mike today. I promise you won't be disappointed. With two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, reach out to Dr. Mike today. Just go to VeneriaDental.com. That's V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
That was a request from who, Justin?
This would be a request from Kimmy in the YouTube chat.
Kimmy in the YouTube chat. Who is this? What song is this?
This is One Too Many by Luke Combs.
Nice. Turn it off once I turn it on. I was only joking. I know the Zeoli Army reads. But I was reading the New York Post today, and they had a story. I'm seeing about this now. About, let's see if I can find this. Something stupid about Ben Affleck and his kid and his shoes. And we're going to get to that. But I wanted to share with you this little. We have audio here of Sheldon Whitehouse responding to Dr. Oz. So first, let me play Dr. Oz's opening statement today. Is what he wants to do, because this is a must-listen to, I'm told. I have not heard it myself yet, but I'm excited for Dr. Oz going in as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and what he can accomplish there. It's an important agency, obviously, but there's a lot of waste, there's a lot of fraud, there's a lot of abuse, and a lot of things that Medicaid and Medicare deal with. Well, really, Medicaid reimbursements, Medicaid, Medicare, it's two different things. Medicaid's for poor, but the reimbursements are making a lot of people sick with a lot of things. This works together with Bobby Kennedy and Jay Bhattacharya, Marty McCary. It's like a dream team of people who want to make America healthy again. And here's the opening statement from Dr. Oz, cut number 7.
That I believe that a physician has a responsibility to tell patients what they need to know, even if the message is uncomfortable. So here's some painful truths that should concern everyone in this room. I'll list them quickly. Healthcare expenditures are growing 2 to 3% faster than our economy. not sustainable. The Medicare Trust Fund will be insolvent within a decade. That's the 2.9% taken out of your paycheck. Medicaid is the number one expense item in most states, consuming 30% of those state budgets. And that's crowding out essential services like schools and public safety that many of you spent your careers trying to develop. A healthcare cost per person in this country is twice that of other developed nations. So it's not just about the money. We're already putting twice as much money into the system. Why is it costing us so much? Because of chronic disease. And those chronic diseases, and we made it easy to be sick in America, are linked to poor lifestyle choices, and they drive three-quarters of the $1.7 trillion that CMS spends a year to support Americans' health. 43% of Americans are obese. That's the major driver of those lifestyle chronic morbidities. That's quadrupled since I was in college. More importantly, we're twice as obese as Europeans. We're nine times as obese as the Japanese. And three-quarters of our young people cannot even qualify for military service. Our maternal mortality rate, and I want to hammer this point home because we talked about it, and Senator Hassan, we talked about this. Well, she slipped out, but she was there a second ago. It puts us in dead last place behind 50 other countries. Maternal mortality rate, women dying during childbirth, medical errors, number three cause of death in America. These are some of the reasons why our life expectancy is now 5 years shorter than comparable countries. This public health crisis threatens our national security. Why? Because it adds to the national debt that is defeating us from within, crowding out other essential services. And we are, in addition, witnessing fellow Americans suffering needlessly, which I believe is a moral failing. As a heart surgeon, I can attest that the most expensive care we give is bad care. You pay to do the wrong thing. You pay to fix what was done wrong.
Let me jump in here for a second here. Today's Pi Day, and it's pizza day, and so if you are like me, you're going to have pizza very, very soon. In fact, I just went into the kitchen and turned the oven on, so it's pre-baking now, and Bridget's going to pull the dough out in a few minutes, and we'll get the dough if you get the room temperature. I know what you're thinking. What about carbs, though, right? What about carbs? So when I went to Italy, and I was having a nice exchange with our Zioli Army Tuscany travelers, went back there in 2018, I think it was that long ago. My God. I remember the woman on the bus who was our tour director, who was a nanny in Milano. I've never been in Milan, but I've only been as far north as Florence, Italy, but I've been all the way as far south as the Amalfi Coast. But I remember her saying that, I said, how often do people eat pasta in Italy? She said, probably 5 or 6 nights a week. But let's look at the obesity rates of America versus Italy for just a second, right? The United States has an obesity rate of about 35% versus Italy's 12%. Now, I'm telling you, when I was there, I didn't see any fat Italians. Like, you know, you turn on The Sopranos or something, and you see it. I didn't see it. I'm sure there are. I know there are, obviously. I mean, Italy's got a 12% obesity rate, okay? But in Tuscany, Florence, the south of Italy, I mean, Rome, you don't see it like you see it in the United States of America. But yet, pasta, all the time. They're always eating pasta and pizza in Italy. And in fact, in Italy, it's funny because pizza there is very different in terms of how they eat it than how they eat it in the United States in lots of parts of the country. Like, for example, in Rome, you go through and there's a guy with a scissor and you tell him how big you want it, he cuts it up, he hands it to you, and then they just eat on a plate. The reason why Napoli, that region of Italy, the wood-fired pizza, it's not crispy, it's not super crispy, it's not meant to be. What they do is they actually they take the whole pizza, and they fold it up and eat the whole friggin' thing. Now, you would think, given the fact that we've been told our whole lives that, first of all, we were told for years, you don't eat fat, eat carbs. Then now we've been told carbs are terrible for you, and you've got to stay away from carbs. And Italy, everybody's eating pasta, everybody's eating bread, everybody's eating pizza. So why is that obesity rate in that country not 97%? Now, they do walk a lot, the Italians, they do. people say, well, stress levels. Okay, have you ever driven in Italy? It's the most heart-wrenching. It is terrifying to drive in Italy, particularly on the Amalfi Coast Highway. It's terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. It's a mistake I'll never repeat in my life. I did it on my honeymoon. It was one of the scariest days of my life. I'm not even joking. Because you're going down the Amalfi Coast Highway. It's over the sea, and it's like this wall that was built in like the year 400 by, you know, Giuseppe. And you got tour buses going by you, freaking scooter bikes going by. Matt DeSantis, is anything I'm saying here wrong?
No. In fact, my friend was driving the car up the mountains of Amalfi, and he actually had a panic attack, and that was even more disastrous. It is terrifying. It's basically traffic going both ways, but there's just enough space for maybe a car and a half. And in some spots, there's only enough space for one car. So you actually have to back up in order to let other vehicles pass.
You got to back up, and then these friggin' tour buses and these guys on scooters, right? Like buzzing in and out. It's insane. My hands were gripped to the little Alfa Romeo that I was driving that on our honeymoon. That I mean, gripped to the steering wheel. I think Bridget had to peel them off when we finally got to Positano. I mean, my God. But what about the pasta and the pizza thing? I'm not wrong either, right? They're always eating pasta over there.
That's the only thing I saw people eating. Like every restaurant you go by, it's all pasta or pizza, which I'm not complaining about. It was all delicious.
It was great. So then it's got to be more than just that, because every now and then, you know, I'll post pictures of me making homemade pasta or homemade bread or homemade pizza, and I'll get somebody, carbs, you know, maybe that's why you're always sick. Well, first of all, I'm not always sick. I've had a lot of like my foot. Eating carbs doesn't give you a staph infection. You know, going to a bad doctor gives you a staph infection. That gives you a staph infection. You know what I mean? But like carbs don't give you a bunion, which led me to the foot doctor, the butcher who gave. And thank God for an Italian named Dr. Melilli from Cooper who saved my foot, who I should have went to in the first place. But. Oh, and also, too, eating carbs doesn't give you diverticulitis because it's actually some would argue that it's eating a high protein diet because you don't get enough fiber and that causes constipation. I mean, it's all kinds of different theories. But my point is this. It's got to be about the processing of the foods, because otherwise everybody in Italy would look like a character on The Sopranos waddling around. But they don't. They just don't. And the Italian women, not for nothing. Oh, I mean, wow. You know, so I'm just saying. It's got to be about how we process our food in this country. I'm convinced of it. The woman who was our tour director, I wish I could remember her name now. And you know, it's funny, too. The Italians flirt so much. It's a stereotype about our people. And I get accused of being a flirt, too. And it's not that. It's just it's who we are. So the bus driver, this is a great story. The bus driver, I remember his name was Franco. No relation to Franco from Spain, and I just remember he was, you know, married guy with a family, but the tour director was gorgeous woman who was a nanny in Milan, and she was wonderful. Anyway, he would always look over and flirt with her all the time because he's at the driver's seat. She would sit in the front seat of the bus. Anyway, he's looking over, flirting with her. And he's like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then boom, so the bus goes, slams into the back of a car on one of the highways between, I don't know, Siena and Florence or something like that. The dude had an espresso machine in his bus. He'd open up a side panel and there was a freaking espresso machine there. It was brilliant. Brilliant. But she was gorgeous and in great shape. And I said, so when you were a nanny in Milan, they eat pasta 5-6 days a week? She's like, yeah. And I said, you eat it too? She goes, yeah. I said, I don't understand. I go, does everybody like go to the gym here? She's like, not really. It's not really a thing. It's not like going to the gym is really not part of the culture. They do walk a lot, though. The Italians do walk a lot. But they also eat late because people say, well, what about late night eating? They eat you, but you go to the piazza and it's 11 o'clock at night. They're just getting started. They're eating, they drink wine. They don't drink a lot of the same crappy, like you don't really get sugary nonsense drinks there. Most of the time it's wine, except for some people, I'm not going to name names, who order Coca-Cola while they're in Italy. So it's got to be how we process our food and the sugar and all the other crap that goes into it. That's the only thing I could think of. All right, let me hear Sylvester the Cat, Snagglepuss, and Sheldon Whitehouse, please, responding to Dr. Oz.
One second. So we're going to start with Sheldon Whitehouse, just so everybody gets a refresh so they can get a baseline in their head.
To set the table with for us. Yeah. I like it.
So I'm going to be on you like a ferret.
So that's Sheldon.
Sorry, I can't. It's just so weird. It's so freaking creepy and weird, isn't it?
I don't understand what he was trying to go for.
All right. Go ahead.
Next, we have Sylvester the Cat. And that's what we mostly agree that he sounds like.
Yeah.
Kirk also has Snuffleupagus from Sesame Street.
Okay. I know Snuffleupagus isn't real or doesn't exist, but are we going to hear him? Because I know that he hides. It was not Snuffleupagus, it was Snagglepuss. Snuffleupagus was the fake friend. Don't you remember that?
Yeah. Let me grab.
Ah, forget it. I like Ferret in the other one. Let's do that. No. Go with the first two. Go with Ferret and what's his name? Sylvester the Cat. Yeah, for sure. Sylvester the Cat. Go ahead. Play it. Go ahead. Play it. What's happening right now?
I'm doing jumping across 30 different YouTube videos.
Oh, you got to combine it, save it as an audio file of the ferret and the suffering succotash. Put it together, save it, label it White House because we're gonna need that going forward. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. We're gonna need that.
We're definitely gonna need that going forward. We're gonna have. This is not the last time we've heard that creepy phrase. That's for sure. All right. Big fourth and final hour coming up straight ahead. Swatting. We got to talk about swatting. Plus, climate change science. The science. Trust the science. They all say right. We're gonna talk about that with an expert as well as your energy bills are about to spike. So big fourth and final hour straight ahead on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD on a beautiful Friday. Pi Day, don't go away.
Rich Zioli, weekday afternoons 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.